kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I didn't die today.
Yay.
You know.
I did. It was rough, but I'm back. Feel better.
That's what happens on Day of the Dead.
Yes. Halloween is over. Our Halloween episode went off without a hitch.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Party cast.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's back to business. It's just us.
We did not do SML Halloween this year.
We didn't. I figured after the 500th episode, it would be way too soon to do another giveaway that big. So I didn't want to annoy people and be like, hey, I know we just did a giveaway like a month ago. Can you send us
really
more free shit?
Has it really only been like a month ago?
Like 2 or 3 months.
Oh.
Maybe.
Well,
longer.
There's always Christmas.
Yeah, we'll see.
We can be Santa ML.
Carl said he was here for it. He was. Carl was here for the 500th episode.
Uh-huh.
Carl's hanging out in chat.
Doesn't seem like it was that recent, but man, I guess time is garbage in 2019.
It is.
I just constantly like fumble through the day with no idea what day of the week it is. I don't ever know what time of day it is.
Well, it is 1:10 on Friday.
That's not true. We recorded this on a Thursday evening.
No, we already tweeted out that we were doing it late this week, so no one cares.
Yeah, but nobody's going to remember the tweet, and then they're going to listen to the show and be like, Friday, what the fuck is this shit? That's what everybody that listens to us sounds like, for the record.
It is. I heard them before.
Yeah.
Dark Mika, wait until SML 666. Oh, I can't wait for that one.
That whole fucker is going to be backered.
I can't wait. That one's going to be sad. Like, I want to do more stupid shows. Like, stupid gimmick shows. Oh, Pickle, what do you want? What? I don't think the recording picked up his...
No.
Oh, well. Good old Pickle.
I have Castiel on my lap asleep.
We gave Pickle a nickname.
Uh-oh.
Pickle the Dickle. Because he's a dick.
Oh, no.
He's such an asshole.
That's like all cats are assholes to a degree, but some of them really crank it to 11.
Yeah, he is such a dick sometimes.
Like Raven is not particularly asshole-ish. He will occasionally knock things off, but that's more of like in a klutzy manner. But I have straight up seen Gabriel get up on my desk, push things to the edge, and then push them off. Like, make sure you're watching, human, because this is broken now.
Oh, Pickle.
He is quite the unruly little fucker. But he's also my favorite cat, so I forgive him.
Pickle is becoming everybody's favorite, except for the other cats.
See, that's Gabe, like the other cats. Well, that's not entirely true. Raven doesn't like anybody. So it's not necessarily Gabe's fault that Raven doesn't like him. But they have their moments where you'll find them cuddled up in a box together. And then you have moments where, like, I literally have to yell at number one to come save Raven.
No, geez.
Because him and Gabe, like, he just invades Gabe's space. And Gabe just doesn't have any tolerance for that shit. But Castiel, on the other hand, like, him and Gabe will play together. I think that might be one of the hitches too. Raven was in a home where he was abused before we got him. Which, by the way, this last week was his gotcha week. It's been a year since we've had him.
Oh.
Which is crazy. But he was really badly abused, and like only in the last 2 or 3 months has he started to come out of that. But he doesn't like play with toys like a typical cat. He just kind of exists.
Jesus.
He's gotten a lot better. He's put on a ton of weight. He used to, you know how like you could hold your hand out and a cat will rub against your hand, right? When Raven first come home, he would literally do gymnastics to get the fuck away from your hand. I thought there were times where I'd reach out to pet him, and the way he was walking by, like, that motherfucker was going to break his back to avoid me.
Oh, my God.
But now, we have a cuddle fest in the morning, and I sit here after the girls leave for school, and Raven gets across the back of my chair and drapes himself over my shoulders and lays his head up against my neck and purrs. And that's his morning. And that's, I mean, that's a big turnaround in a year for a cat that didn't even want you to touch him.
Yeah.
But because he's not playful, Gabe wants to play with him, and then Raven's just like, leave me the fuck alone. And then Gabe goes, well, fine, if you don't want me to play with you, I'll just murder you. And then they get into a fight.
Nice.
But now Castiel, on the other hand, Castiel, on the other hand, will actually play with Gabe and, like, outright chases after him. Of course, Castiel's only 7 weeks old. Yeah. But, you know, he'll, like, chase after him. And
our kittens are 5 weeks old in there. Oh, they're so adorable.
I see their pictures all the time, and I'm like, come here with me. And I get to be like safe in the knowledge that they are too far away to come live with me. Unless one of them sneaks into Predator's box.
Road trip.
But David would kill me. I don't think so. David would be fine. I would kill me in about 3 months and be like, you fucking idiot. We don't need another cat. The person that we got Cass from was trying to convince us to take Cass's brother. Mm. And I had to, like, put my foot down. Like, I wake up one morning and I got a good 17 cat pictures in my inbox on Facebook. And I'm like, no. I just have to say no. No.
Lord of Night says he'd rather have a ferret, and the Dark Meek, I'd rather have a dragon.
You know what is an unusual pet I used to have and I miss having so bad? I couldn't have them now because the cats are murder cats, but I used to have chinchillas.
Ooh.
And their names were Pippin and Fizgig, and they lived 12 years.
Wow.
Nobody tells you those little rodents are here forever. I loved them, though. You'd give them, like, a Cheerio, and they'd hold it like a little donut and nibble on it. Best thing ever. But they take a bath in volcanic ash.
Oh, my God.
And so you have to, like, well, at that time, nobody else. Oh, Lord
had chinchillas.
Yeah. Huh. They bark a lot. They make a lot of noise. But back when I had them, they weren't common pets around here. So we always had to order the volcanic ash for them. Now you can just get it at Walmart. But they are fantastic little creatures. I just love them, but I could see how fast Murder Kitty would get them.
Murder Kitty.
Yeah. Gabe, nothing is safe with Gabe. The only reason the rabbits are safe is because Ember is mean as fuck, and Sage just does not care. Sage would have to move for anybody to be, like, interested in chasing him, and he just lays there.
Pickle's trying to eat my pen.
It's a tasty pen. Pens are not safe. You know what the most difficult thing to keep in my house? Which is horrible because there's four females with long hair here. Ponytail holders.
Oh, yeah.
Ponytail holders are never safe. Like, the moment Gabe sees one,
they're gone.
His eyes are red.
Yeah.
And he's just like, step back, mother. I will save you from the Elastiband. And then it's just, gone. And I'm like, well, I didn't want to tie my hair up today anyway.
Dark Mika, I had a coyote when I was a kid. It was an inside dog. I didn't know it was a coyote for a long time. They had a Pomeranian. They got along just fine.
Yeah.
Fucking coyote.
There are wild coyotes here, but
we'll have to ask about that later.
She told us about it before.
I don't remember. Look who you're talking to. I don't remember shit.
That's a good point.
I don't even remember who was on the last episode. Was I there?
There was another episode. This isn't number one.
No, I don't remember.
Shit.
Anyway, we should probably get to some news. There's a lot of news we got to take care of. A lot of news, a lot of reviews. Another big episode. October has been fucking insane, and I can't wait until the holiday rush eases up a bit.
Remember when I was like, I'm not going to take very many reviews because I want to do Inktober?
Yeah.
And then I didn't do Inktober.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have time for all the reviews that I wasn't taking.
Yeah, it's been a crazy, crazy month, but a lot of news that we got to get to. Games with Gold and PlayStation Plus for November were announced.
Mm-hmm.
Which do you want to start with, the good one or the bad one?
PlayStation.
The good one, yeah. PlayStation Plus, they're getting Outlast 2 and Neo.
Okay.
So two pretty solid games. Outlast is really good. Neo, solid Souls game. I haven't picked that one up, so now I'll be able to get that one free, which is exciting.
Yeah.
And then Xbox announced theirs as well, and not as good.
No.
This is kind of a letdown. Kind of a letdown of a month. Xbox One for the entire month of November. Get Sherlock Holmes, The Devil's Daughter. Decent game.
Given the whole, delisting issue with all those, I'm kind of glad that they're just like, here, take it.
Yeah.
Because it is part of a series, and there are probably people who got the other parts as Games with Gold. And they're, I've heard they're decent games. I haven't had time to play them. Who has time? But, it's a solid one. It's okay. I'm not disappointed in that one.
Yeah, I'm not mad at that one. It's nothing that, I'm going to write home about and tell my mom, Mother, you wouldn't believe the free game I got this month. Sherlock Holmes, The Devil's Daughter. It was wonderful.
You kind of, deviated between Russian and English and German there, and I'm not sure how that all happened. There were so many dialects and not enough brain cells to understand it all.
Good. And then from November 16th to December 15th is The Final Station, which, again, an enjoyable game, but nothing really exciting.
The problem with that, too, is that it was a Mixpot giveaway at one point.
Yeah.
So,
which is a huge bummer, because a lot of people already got it free.
Yeah, so it's like, well, okay, next.
Xbox 360 for the November 1st through the 15th gets Star Wars Jedi Starfighter from the original Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, okay, but no achievements.
Nope.
That sucks. We want our achievements. And then from the 16th through the 30th, Joyride Turbo, which most people are saying is the best game of the pick of the month.
But it was already Games with Gold at one point.
Was it?
And it's been in Game Pass. And it's usually on sale for $2.
Was it a Games with Gold, though?
Yes.
Because I haven't heard anyone say it was a repeat.
I am about 208% sure that it was.
Hmm.
Because I remember I bought it on sale, and then 2 months later, it was Games with Gold.
I know they did a giveaway with it for something, but I don't remember it being Games with Gold.
Googling.
Yeah, Google it. while you're Googling it, Call of Duty Modern Warfare made over $600 million in its first 3 days.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So, despite the fact that PlayStation gets an exclusive mode and a lot of people said that they were going to boycott it, nobody boycotted the game.
No. I'm struggling to, talk about this one without giving out any of my review stuff prematurely. But, Modern Warfare kind of, it has that nostalgia element, even though it's not been out. The original series wasn't that long ago. It's still nostalgic in a way, at least for Call of Duty fans. And so it's something that they've been begging for and have hyped themselves up so much over that I think a little bit of disassociation kind of had to happen. And you have to be like, yeah, Blizzard sucks. Blizzard did something shitty. Activision Blizzard did something shitty, but there's, you know, the people at Infinity Ward still need to feed their kids.
Yeah.
And so you kind of like justify it. It's kind of like how people justify buying a dog at the pet shop. It's not that dog's fault. It was at the pet shop. It still needs a home.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to support the business and the shitty side of things, but also you don't want to punish those that weren't involved.
No.
At least that was my internal turmoil over it, and I'm sure I probably wasn't alone in that. But I don't think there was ever like a hefty lean to boycott it in the first place. Yeah, people said they were going to boycott Blizzard and stuff, but
it wasn't going to happen.
It I mean,
how many times have they said boycott Modern Warfare, boycott Call of Duty? And there's screenshots of like people's Steam pages with like 90% of them playing Call of Duty, and it's a group that was to boycott Modern Warfare.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if maybe peer pressure becomes a thing or what, but you don't want to miss out on it at the same time.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm hearing so much good about it that I'm tempted to pick it up.
You don't like to pew pew.
I know. Well, I enjoy pew pewing sometimes. It's just versus pew pewing. Campaign pew pewing, I'm down for.
I will teach you to be a hardcore esport ready pew pewer.
No, you won't.
I will try.
No, you won't.
I almost guided you to victory in Blackout. I can do this. On the bright side, if you played with me in Suda, it wouldn't matter if you sucked because I go like 50-2 anyway. So
true.
I will, you know, the score goes to 75. Let me get 50 points. Just don't die.
I'll get 3 of them.
You know,
if I'm lucky.
I am not exaggerating when I say the score goes to 75 and I will get 50.
That is insane.
I am very good at Call of Duty.
But we'll get to more Call of Duty later on in the show. There is more news. Some games are going to be leaving Game Pass soon. This is the bad news that we have to talk about. There's no dates yet on when they're leaving, but don't fart around if you wanted to play them. 7 games are going to be leaving the service unless last-minute contracts are worked out and they come back. But the list is Agents of Mayhem, Darksiders War Mastered Edition, Darksiders 2 Definitive Edition, Grid 2, MXGP3, The Surge, and Thomas Was Alone.
Oh, I need to play Thomas Was Alone.
Yeah, that's an easy 1,000, too.
Yeah, I've heard it's very good. Yeah,
very good game.
That one, Thomas Was Alone, come out right before I hit my indie phase and started playing. Like, I used to be one of the people who bought Call of Duty once a year, and that was it. That's all I had. Because we're poor, and we have a rule in our house that if we're not both going to play it, we don't buy it.
Mm.
And so I would miss out on a lot of really cool shit because David doesn't want to play anything except for pew pews. Pew pews and trucking simulators.
I was going to say, what about the truck sims?
At which point I'm just like, you know, like the few exceptions to any of that would be like, oh, I'd get the Sims or something like that.
Yeah.
But it was actually when Games with Gold had so many me for free, and I played so many me, and I got stuck. There was one level I couldn't do, and I looked up a Macca's guide, and then he was also doing a giveaway for a different indie game, and I said, fuck it, I'll sign up for that. And then that's how I got here.
Beautiful.
Right? And so, like,
now you're doing this shitty show for what, 2-3 years now?
I mean, that was quite the path I did not expect to stumble upon. When they say take the road less traveled, they don't mean the one covered in thorns, dumbass.
The ones covered in podcast trails.
Yeah. Thorns, podcasts, and glean giveaways. Coincidentally, that's how I found Twitch as well.
Oh, God.
It was just a horrible rabbit hole that has not ended.
Well, you mentioned anyway. The Sims. Did you hear where The Sims is going to be going?
No.
To Steam.
Really?
Yeah, EA is going to be partnering with Valve after taking their games off of Steam like 8 years ago. Yeah. They're going to be returning to Steam starting on November 15th with Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. And in the coming months, more games will be available, including Sims 4, Unravel 2, Apex Legends, Battlefield 5, FIFA 20. And starting in spring, EA Access is coming to Steam.
What?
Yeah. So Steam is getting back EA. They're getting EA Access, they're getting EA Games, and they also confirmed that Steam and Origin players will play together.
Well.
Yeah.
I mean, they sell everything through their own Origin marketplace, so I wonder what prompted them to be like, no, we gotta get back on the Steam train. Especially when everybody is like, oh my god, we're partnering up with Epic now.
I hope not.
Odd. I'm just kind of like staring off into space trying to figure out what the fuck is EA doing here. I'm a little perturbed. I'm like, I'm confused and kind of perturbed by this. And I'm like, I don't understand their play.
Hey, more games to more players. So
yeah, I mean, that's never a bad thing. Just odd. And also now I'm a little annoyed because I bought it on Origin. Fuck.
Oh, well, you could double dip.
I can't. I've already double dipped.
You could triple dip.
Xbox and Origin. I cannot afford to buy The Sims a gajillion times. That doesn't mean I won't. You could just pretend
it's Skyrim.
See, you're not wrong. The thing that I tend to do is that, like, I have it on PC so that I can play it on PC when D is hogging my Xbox. Because I don't want to go in the room and play on number one's Xbox. So then I have it on PC and I have it on the Xbox. And then what I do is I wait until there's a sale on DLC, and whichever one's got the better sale is the one I buy it on. Because I'm a cheapskate. Then that means, like, I don't have one definitive copy with all my DLC.
Oh,
and that's annoying.
God.
Because I'll be playing on one version and then I'll be looking for something that I only have on the other version.
Well, that's your own fault.
And I'm like, son of a bitch.
100% your own fault there.
Yeah, but I've saved tons of money. Like 24 cents, probably, but it's fine.
Oh, Jesus. Some other EA Access news. We mentioned EA Access. Xbox One players finally have a way out on EA Access.
Oh!
Yeah.
Shit.
It launched on the PS4 as part of EA Access, and now it's finally available on Xbox One's EA Access. It took long enough, but it's here.
With EA Access, does it work the same way when you're playing it cooperatively? Like, one person has EA Access and downloads the game, and they can send an invite to somebody, and it works even if that person doesn't have EA Access or the game?
I have no clue.
Hmm. I haven't played A Way Out, and I would like to, but I want to drag Studa's whore ass through it. And, like, I don't want to have to buy EA Access for two of us.
Well, you could drag my whore ass through it.
I could do that as well. I am not opposed to dragging whore asses through games.
Yeah. As long as there's a whore ass, it doesn't matter whose whore ass it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I am an equal opportunity whore ass dragger.
Speaking of whore asses, Apex Legends is at 70 million players. That's a lot of whore asses playing Apex Legends.
That is a lot of whore asses.
Some bad news from EA. NBA Live 20 has been canceled. Instead, EA is focused on creating, quote, something fresh and something fresh for the next generation of players and platforms. So it looks like they're taking off until PS5 and Scarlet launch.
EA, what is you doing?
Their it's probably for games the better. Are
like the biggest thing keeping them afloat.
Except for NBA Live. The NBA Live has been getting its ass kicked by the 2K series since forever.
Has it?
Yeah. NBA Live has been horrible. Recent years, the game has been getting a lot better.
Yeah.
And some people said, like, Live 19 may have been better than 2K19. But it looks like EA taking the year off, they're just not getting the sales that they need to keep the series going and kicking.
The licensing on that has to be insane.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, speaking of the PS5, we mentioned this on the last show, but shocking absolutely nobody, Sony has trademarked the PS6, PS7, PS8, PS9, and PS10 in Japan, ruining the surprise of what those systems would have been called.
PS garbage! Yep, that's how I feel about that.
Yeah.
But, anyway. You know, they're totally shaking up the
naming structure that they have been going with. Yeah, Carl Sagan making good on their PS9 commercial from back in the day. I remember that one.
Bitches are prepared.
They are prepared. Speaking of Sony, they are ending their PlayStation View TV service.
That's kind of out of the blue, isn't it?
Somewhat, yeah. A lot of people are subscribed to it, and it's going to be ending January 30th, and those people are going to have to find new online internet TV services to subscribe to. And there are so friggin' many of them. Like, Ashley and I were looking at ways that we could cut the cord and try going to internet streaming TV, and, like, there's no package that has everything that we need.
No.
Like, we need local channels because Ashley watches Grey's Anatomy. I watch Seth Meyers and Superstore. I watch football. You can watch
those on Hulu.
Okay, those you can.
Yeah.
But then Hulu doesn't have Comedy Central. Hulu
is expensive. Sling would probably be a better bet for you.
But they don't have locals.
They do in some areas.
Not mine.
Oh. Yeah, they don't hear either, but I'm just used to that shit.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Trust me, I
use this garbage anyway.
I did like 5 hours of research the other night trying to look at everything, and it seems if one service has channels we need, they're not available on Xbox. If it's available on Xbox, they're missing channels we need. One has some channels, the other has some channels.
Yeah.
I think the best thing would be Sling. In some way to get locals, but I don't know how we could get locals without getting a shitty antenna and dealing with over-the-air quality.
Antennas have gotten a lot better, though. Like, you don't have to have the big one sticking off your roof no more.
Oh, I know.
So, I mean, we do, because our nearest radio station is 100 miles away. And that's not an exaggeration.
I'm not surprised at all.
Comes out of West Virginia. But if you're within range, you could probably get a decent antenna for like $30 and be fine.
No.
You just have to. There used to be a website and I had it marked. But I don't remember if I cleared it out. But you used to be able to flat out just like type in your address and it would show you all the over the air stuff and like how far away it was, so you knew what strength antenna to get.
No. Carl's saying to try YouTube TV. I looked at that one. They don't have like Comedy YouTube Central TV. Or MTV.
Mm-mm.
And as much as I hate MTV, I love the challenge. Remember Real World Road Rules Challenge?
That shit's
still going. They're on season like 35. And wow. That is my crack. I need that every week.
Catfish I fucking love is the my challenge. Occasional guilty pleasure.
Yeah, MTV like is just filled with guilty then. Pleasures.
Every now and then, I just don't feel well, and I'm home by myself, and I turn on the TV to Catfish, and I lay on my heating pad and cry. it's a good day.
But yeah, hopefully we could figure something out, because paying over $200 for TV is bullshit, and DirecTV can eat an asshole.
Oh yeah. We have Netflix that I pay for. And then I will pay for Hulu, but only when new episodes of The Handmaid's Tale are coming out, because that's the only thing I watch on there. So I pay for it, you know, once or twice a year to get caught up on The Handmaid's Tale. And then, but I'll only do it makes me so mad that they charge $6 and then still have ads.
Yeah.
And it's like, fuck you. I already gave you money. Just let me watch my shit.
And then worse is, even on their ad-free tier, some shows still have ads
anyway. But yeah, then, you know, we just occasionally pay for that and then just drop it whenever I'm caught up on whatever I'm watching.
Yeah.
And then we have Amazon Prime. But I very rarely watch anything on Amazon Prime, but the girls use it a lot.
I don't know if I've ever watched anything on Amazon Prime. We have it.
Yeah.
But I'm just
you're a thing that exists.
It is a thing that exists. And
occasionally, I tend to use it for renting movies, though. Mm. Because I will use the no rush shipping, because they don't get in any hurry to bring it to me anyway. I might as well get a dollar for my weight. So I use the no rush shipping, and then I stack up a couple of bucks, and then I'm like, well, guess I'm going to watch a movie, rent a movie for cheap. But then Disney Plus starts on the 12th, and I was going to sign up for that, but my sister was like, no, no, no. You already share Netflix and Amazon with me, so it's my turn. And I was like, I'm not dumb enough to say no.
Yeah.
So she already paid for a year.
I don't know if it's true, but I heard that they're going to do a bundle service of Hulu, Disney Plus, and ESPN Plus.
I don't give a fuck about ESPN Plus, but if the price was good. I do
because of UFC.
Yeah. If the price was good, I would still take it up on the, because Disney does own Hulu, and I was hoping there would be, you know, be something in there. Disney Plus is killing Netflix. Netflix has taken a huge hit from Disney Plus's existence. And it is not a good look. I mean, they have plenty of good original programming, but they also have a shit ton of garbage.
They have a lot of garbage.
And I am, every time I go look for a movie that I fully expect to be on Netflix and it's not there, I'm a little more pissed off. And I'm like, I'm keeping this shit for the kids. But then they went and took all of the Disney stuff, except for a handful of them, which are going to disappear. And I'm like, look, you're outliving your usefulness here.
I like how the Moobot auto messages about Amazon Prime.
It hurt us.
It knows. Oh, God. More news. Kojima Production has confirmed that Death Stranding will be releasing on the PC in early summer 2020.
All those people that mock Xbox.
It's not an exclusive. It's on PC. Well, Death Stranding is going to be on PC, so shut your whore mouths.
I have such mixed feelings about Death Stranding. I like Norman Reedus, but then they said we can't see his weenie, so now I kind of don't care. It took all the fun out of that, didn't it? Oh, they?
God. You could still see his ass, though.
That is true.
Reedus ass.
I'm sure there'll be plenty of screenshots. I don't need to rush out and buy a PlayStation for this.
You know, as soon as it hits PC, people are going to mod it so you can see his dick.
I like modders. They are my new favorite people.
Although I wouldn't be surprised if they do not model a dick and it's just like a mannequin and nothing there.
Which would be
even funnier to look at.
Like a Ken doll.
Yeah.
Hashtag dick mods. I'm down for that.
Dick mods.
I'm a become a game modder. I'm gonna learn how to program just so that I can mod every game to have random penises in them.
Oh, Jesus.
Like Skyrim, on all the big towers, they're now weenies.
Oh my god.
Like the Elder Scrolls, those aren't lion head knockers anymore. Those are weenies.
Those are ball sacks. Click, click, click.
Yep. And you have to tug on the dick to make the balls like against the door.
I'm just imagining church bells, but instead they're balls.
Yes!
And the rope to pull them is just a giant dick, so you're yanking the dick and the balls are clanging. Clong, clong, clong. And they're just ball slapping around.
This is fantastic. I have a bright future.
This show has gone off the rails. We got to bring it back. This is more sports news, but it does have a potential effect on video games. The NCAA voted to allow athletes to profit from their likenesses.
Fucking good.
Yeah, so now we might see the return of NCAA football that people have been begging for since like 2014.
And I mean, well, no, college kids, they don't get paid. So
yeah, they don't.
They fucking should be. And they fucking should be able to profit off of their own goddamn faces. Literally everybody else can.
Mm-hmm.
So
good for the NCAA for letting kids earn some money off of their performances and who they are and what they do.
Yes.
Last bit of news that I have is that Ubisoft has confirmed that Watch Dogs Legion, Gods and Monsters, Rainbow Six Quarantine will all be cross-generation games, meaning we'll see the game release on both Xbox Scarlet and PS5, as well as current-gen consoles. They also confirmed that two other unannounced games would be cross-gen titles as well.
Did they say there was... did I read cross-play as well?
I don't know. I didn't hear anything on there. Just cross. They want to make all of their PvP games cross play.
Yeah.
But I guess wish in one hand, shit in the other, see which one fills up first and see if it happens. But it'd be cool if it happens. They're going to try. Yes. As long as Sony plays ball, which they said they are.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's the news I got. Anything you want to talk about?
If I had it, I forgot it. So we're good. Fine. Let's go. Next.
Good. Review time. You ready for these?
Yes. I was just sitting here and I realized that my shot schedule is messed up and I haven't had my shot. And that's why I'm sitting here like in a daze.
Go take your shot then.
I cannot because I will I get sick. So it'll have to wait.
Get sick on the show.
Yeah. Also, well, I can't.
Call of Duty and the new Call of Duty.
I don't have enough grip to push the button, so David has to do it for me.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, you ready for reviews then?
Yes.
All right. First game to talk about tonight is called Call of Duty Modern Warfare, developed by Infinity Ward, published by Activision, released October 25th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $59.99. Call of Duty Modern Warfare engulfs fans in an incredibly raw, gritty, and provocative narrative that brings unrivaled intensity and shines a light on the changing nature of modern war. Cole, tell us about it.
Oh, boy. the first thing that I want to point out is that the campaign for this Call of Duty is surprisingly short compared to previous ones. And yet, somehow, it's not a negative. One of the things about World War II, Black Ops 4 didn't have a campaign at all, so I guess it was technically the shortest. But one of the things about World War II is that I kind of felt like the campaign kept droning on for no good reason. It was like, tell your story and get it over with. So the campaign for Modern Warfare, even though it's roughly 4 to 6 hours, depending on your skill set, it feels like it tells the story more cohesively, and the pacing of it is far better. That said,
so no padding, no fluff. It's just straight to the point.
Like, everything you do is for a reason, rather than just, hey, stand here and, like, don't die. It's more, this is why you're being attacked. This is, I'm trying not to give out any spoilers. you know, this is why you're being attacked, or this is what you have to do. This is a consequence of it. No time says 40 hours to complete.
No, that would be sorry. Me.
In all reality, I did a blind run on Veteran, and I took about 6 hours. So, and that was, I did it on Veteran, and most people are not going to do their blind run on Veteran. But the story just, it has its issues. I think it's one of the better Call of Duty campaigns, point blank. Maybe not as good as the original Modern Warfare. I think that there's just something about that story that holds with me, and there's even still like lines from it that I continue to quote. The campaign for this Modern Warfare is a little bit reboot, a little bit reimagining. You have a lot of the same characters. You have a lot of references, but it kind of feels like it's trying to set up the old games without staying entirely faithful to the old games. Which was somehow okay. Like, it all fit together enough that I was okay with it. And I got to the end, and without a spoiler, I was just like sitting there fanning my face because there were tears flowing, and because like it was hitting the nostalgia buttons, and I remembered certain characters from the other games in different situations, even though I had played it so long ago. That's good storytelling.
Yeah.
And I definitely give them credit for that, because there's not a lot of that in Call of Duty. Unfortunately, especially anybody that's played Ghosts or Advanced Warfare, Sledgehammer Games, you felt a little burned by the campaign. I had mixed feelings over Blackout 4 not even having a campaign, because I was kind of like, good, because they fucked up so many of them lately that we just don't even need to bother with it. Just let me go pew pew, people. I don't need a reason to. But I enjoyed the time that I spent with Modern Warfare. I don't think that the big bad for Modern Warfare was as memorable as the previous game's iterations of a big bad. And there were some storytelling inconsistencies that were some people had problems with them. I technically didn't, and I'll get to that in a second. The setting for the game is Uzbekistan, which is not a real country. Although, given how much countries change hands in the Middle East, you could kind of believe it was.
Yeah.
But the story being told and the characters are very real. They are, it's telling the story. Basically, it's a little topical. We have allies with the freedom fighters, but there's, you know, back and forth with the boots on the ground and the higher ups. Is, are they freedom fighters? Are they terrorists? Are they, you know, engaging in the rules of war, or are they using waterboarding tactics? Trigger warning for anybody with PTSD, but yes, there's waterboarding in this game. Be aware of that. Like, if that's going to freak you the fuck out, that's there. They don't shy away from the negative sides of war, but...
And to be fair, if you have PTSD, I think Modern Warfare is the last game you should play.
In the first place. But there are people who will be like... That, I mean, even without PTSD, there were people who were like, oh, but you just turned waterboarding into a mini game. But would it have been fair to have a war in the Middle East and not mention that that was a thing? Because the whole premise of the waterboarding segment is they're trying to get information out of you, and you actively choose your choice of how to answer. And if they're not satisfied with the answer, they start pouring the water over your face. It's first person game. And in order to not get dead and have to do that again, you have to like keep trying to turn your face and take gulps of air. And if you breathe in water, well, sucks to be you.
No.
And there were people who were kind of mad that like it was turned into a mini game, so to speak. But Call of Duty is interactive entertainment, and they had to do something, and they couldn't completely leave it out.
Yeah. Like
waterboarding and the wars in the Middle East, they go hand in hand. Unfortunately, it was a topic that needed to be there if they were going to give that experience. Another element that had some people pissed off particularly was the Highway of Death segment of the campaign. So the actual Highway of Death was an American attack, and it was not one of our proudest moments in the war in the Middle East. In Call of Duty's campaign, in the mission titled Highway of Death, your soldier is there with a group of the freedom fighters, and there is an attack by Russians. So some people were like, oh, we're trying to blame, you know, Call of Duty is blaming that attack on the Russians rather than, and like rewriting history rather than taking credit for what the Americans did to it. But if you actually pay attention, you can see that the area was already bombed. Everybody had already been slaughtered. And there are mentions of the Americans having done it. But it's not front and center. And anybody that knows anything about like the agreement that the military and the entertainment industry have are aware of why. Like, they're not technically allowed to show the military in a bad light.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, going into stark detail of how the Americans fucked up everything there wouldn't have done the story any good for the point that it was at, but it also would have, like, put the element. But I don't think, like, everybody says, oh, they completely rewrote history, but if you look at the area and you listen to the dialogue, you can tell that they don't gloss over that America did the initial attack. It's just that this is a secondary attack. I mean, you're already there popping people off with a giant sniper rifle. Additionally, I don't necessarily know that it's Call of Duty's job to be historically accurate 100% of the time. I don't think any game should have to be historically accurate 100% of the time. It's fiction. We don't expect it from our movies.
True.
Saving Private Ryan got shit wrong, and everybody still loves it. Black Hawk Down got shit wrong. Everybody loved it. Red Dawn. Sometimes it's okay to just like put a fictional spin on it. It's a fictional universe. It's a fictional country. Not everything has to be. No, nobody's looking at Call of Duty and using it for a history lesson. but gameplay wise, I thought it was a fantastic story. I think they did a really good job of you know, telling every character's story, giving you insight into how the different factions were interacting with each other. And you don't just specifically, like, have, oh, this is the good side, this is the bad side. Like, even though most of the groups that you're going against are Russians or terror cells, you still have the freedom fighters as your allies, and you have a Russian ally, and everybody comes together to take out the big central bad guy, regardless of national origin or affiliations. And that's nice to see that they're like, yeah, everybody's got their differences, but they worked together and went for the big bad, for better or worse. But it's Call of Duty. It has its betrayals and it has its emotional moments. I don't think I got soggy-eyed, but I didn't, like, flat-out cry. There's without giving away, like, it, because it does harken back to, like, some of the original characters, and if you know about certain characters and their outcomes, then finding out their relevance to the new story is kind of emotional. In addition to campaign, everybody gives a fuck about the multiplayer. That is front and center. Everybody wants to know how multiplayer plays. There is one big thing about Modern Warfare that I am excited to say exists. They have ditched the 3-lane system for map design. If you are familiar with Call of Duty multiplayer, Treyarch started it. B-Nox, who is the one that handles the multiplayer side after Sledgehammer got promoted to making their own, and then Sledgehammer got in trouble, and now they're not making their own anymore. There's a lot of studios involved, and a lot of them have fucked up. but B-Nox, like, adopted that 3-lane map design style and carried it over into the Infinity Ward versions of Call of Duty as well. And there's benefits to a 3-lane layout for online multiplayer. You're always guaranteed a fight because there's only 3 paths that people can typically follow. So if you're following one of those paths, you're going to find somebody to shoot at. It keeps you in the action, but it also makes it really easy for locking certain areas down and limiting spawns and spawn trapping and just sitting there and picking people off before they even have a chance. With that gone, you have a little more freedom to move around the map without the risk of immediately getting fucked up. You can be more strategic. Excuse me, I had to hiccup. You can be more strategic in the objective-based games or in team deathmatch. Your team can work together to watch over certain areas of the map without having to constantly be worried that somebody's just going to take another route and come up behind you. I definitely prefer the more open arrangement, but also I'm a hardcore run and gunner. And I just, like, want to zigzag and cut through different areas and go through buildings and out windows and be in all kinds of different places. It also means that the maps are much larger. And you have to go looking for the fights. You're not going to constantly be in them. You have to plan your approach to them a little more carefully. You still only have a handful of seconds to do that because that's Call of Duty and it moves quick. But it's just a little more thoughtful for map design and gameplay and how you're going to be able to move around it. And I enjoy that a million times more than just like, oh, they're in lane A. Oh, they're in lane B. Oh, they're in lane C. The downside is even though there are 21 maps, you're only going to run into maybe 5 or 6 of them per playlist. Because they have the new 2v2 gunfight. That's where you're going to find the smaller maps. So you're not going to have a moment where, like, you have a team of 6 battling it out with noob tubes on Rust. And if you, Joe, you don't play Call of Duty much, but Rust was like this super tiny map and there was like one building in the middle and everybody got up there with noob tubes and like shot rockets and stuff down at the people below as they spawned. It was chaos and it was crazy and it was fantastic. You're not going to have that. Dome was Modern Warfare 3's version of Rust, although it was considerably larger. But man, Rust was the shit. It was so good. But yeah, the smaller maps are more segmented off for the 2v2 gunfight playlist, which is a new playlist. My phone is going off. Ding. I don't even know where it's at. It's somewhere under the anxiety pile. system have to ding.
You don't mute your phone before the show?
I usually do, but like I said, it's somewhere in the anxiety pile, and I don't know where it's at.
Just follow the dings.
Nah, it's the anxiety pile. I'll just ignore it.
So, awesome campaign. The multiplayer is really good. What else is there? What's Spec Ops?
Spec Ops is a series of missions that you can play cooperatively. And the interesting thing that I was not expecting about Spec Ops is that the missions continue to build on to the actual campaign story with additional cutscenes.
Mm.
So that's fantastic. I think that is an incredible addition. That is not something that the original Spec Ops missions and the original Modern Warfare series did. I think it's great to give us that little more bit of, you know, information and look into the campaign. But that does make me wonder more about what we're missing without the Spec Ops survival mode. Like, if all the other missions provide more insight into the campaign's narrative, what are we missing with not having Spec Ops on Xbox? Or the survival.
Yeah.
It's an unfortunate, and it's not to say that we're not ever going to get it, but Call of Duty's life cycle is 1 year. Like it or lump it, people play the shit out of it for the year, and then they get the next one. There's not gonna be people at the 1 year mark just sitting there waiting for Spec Ops survival mode or putting their time into that when the new Call of Duty's already going to be out.
Yeah.
And that exclusivity is bullshit. I'm even more surprised they've gone that route because they have opted to completely remove the season pass element. We no longer have a season pass or a la carte DLC for Call of Duty. From Call of Duty Modern Warfare, it is available to everybody at launch, same day. Regardless of console, it has cross-platform play. It has mouse and keyboard support. You can see what platform and what input people are using when you are playing multiplayer.
Does it actually show a PlayStation logo for PlayStation players?
Yes.
Wow, because Dauntless didn't.
Yeah. There's a PlayStation and then a computer and then the Xbox, and it will tell you what system they are on, and it will tell you if they... You can mark it down to not play cross-play, and you can mark it down to not play with somebody using different inputs than you. I didn't care. I went into it, and I was still murdering people. Come at me. because the very first thing I do when I start playing Call of Duty is put my sensitivity at 14. So I don't care about a mouse and keyboard. That means shit to me. So
lots of ways to play. I got to know, for $60, is it worth playing?
Yes. I was really hesitant given the drama around Spec Ops Survival. And I am still like worried we're missing something. If there's part of a story element to it. I haven't been able to look into it enough to know if there was a story element that was left out, because if there is, I don't want to be accidentally spoiled on it.
Yeah.
But you know, the game itself, it's a really good reimagining. It's a really good return to its roots for Call of Duty. It's what the series fucking needed. It's what we were begging for out of Black Ops 4 and didn't get. And it's good to just be back in Call of Duty the way I remember playing Call of Duty. One thing that I did find amusement in, though, was that there were news articles about how they were stripping out, like, the unicorn guns and pink camo and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
In my very first match, I saw somebody with pink and purple camo. So nice. That didn't stick. And I have hopes I will have my unicorn gun back.
Well, it's good to hear that the game turned out well. I like I said, I'm not a huge Call of Duty guy, but I've heard so much good about the campaign on this one that I'm probably going to have to pick it up and give it a go.
I think from an achievement standpoint, too, this is probably the easiest Call of Duty to complete ever.
No, that doesn't affect me.
But I mean, I've beat the campaign in every Call of Duty I've played, typically on Veteran. I almost always do them on Veteran because I'm a show off. And never have I had more than like 5 achievements for the Call of Duty campaign. And this one, I was like knocking them out left, right, and center. And there's only a couple that I need to go back and get. Like, I'm just going to set it to easy and go back and do the things that I missed. Because it's mundane stuff like, oh, shoot out 3 tires or something shit like that. And I was like, I might complete my first Call of Duty game from an achievement standpoint. What the fuck is this? I'm not mad, thank you. But it took a while. Because I think it's been, what, 11 years? 12? Somewhere in there. It's a long time to not complete a Call of Duty game.
Yeah, for real. So get your shit together.
Yeah. Is there an achievement for dying 50 times in one session? No. But, and I'll be perfectly honest, and I wish I'd brought this up during the actual review, the checkpoint system is probably one of the most forgiving for a Call of Duty I've ever seen. Even on Veteran, there were times where I would just spawn, because it was hard. And I was like, I'm a running gunner. I just go in guns blazing and hope for the best. It doesn't always work out that way.
Oh, God. Well, but if you didn't mention it in the first 25 minutes of your review, you're not getting to it now.
I will get it in the next 45 minutes. Sit down.
Next game to talk about. Oh, God damn you.
No. Shall not be damned. Go ahead. Next. Speaking of dicks.
Next game to talk about is called Cat Quest 2, developed by the Gentle Bros, published by P-Cube, released October 24th on the Xbox One for $14.99. Cat Quest 2 is a 2D open-world action RPG set in a fantasy realm of cats and dogs. Under threat from a continuing war between the cats of Felengard and the advancing dogs of the Lupus Empire, Cat Quest 2 tells the tale of two kings brought together against their will on a journey of possum discovery to reclaim their thrones. Cole, tell us about Cat Quest 2.
Oh, so many puns.
So many puns, and I love it. This Carnage the video game.
This game is just Puns Quest 2, basically, or Cat's Puns 2. It's one pun after another. I think it's a perfectly suitable beginner RPG. I think that the way that Cat's Quest is set up, it doesn't matter if you've never played an RPG before. You're going to be able to go into it and hack and slash your way through it. I love how simple it is, and yet how deep it is. There are 73 dungeons in this game. 73. That doesn't include side quests or main quests that don't go in a dungeon. It's just there are 73 dungeons.
Which is a lot of dungeons.
You're going to be here a while. And you're going to love every second of it. I played this on Steam. It came out on Xbox. And I'm like, please give me this shit. I need to do this again. And I don't typically enjoy replaying a game. I'm normally like, no, I did it. Get it out of here. Fuck. Move on. Cat's Quest? Nope.
I want to,
puns and all, I will suck it up because I just enjoy playing this game so much. I play RPGs that are hardcore and require a lot of effort and thought and are not beginner friendly. But I find the difficulty being lower for Cat Quest to be like a really good palate cleanser. Like, I can sit and kill people in Call of Duty for 5 or 6 hours and then load up Cat Quest and just go through some dungeons and not have to overly think it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I'm cruising along and enjoying my time. And the story, the story boils down to there's twin kings. One's a cat, one's a dog. And they need to take their place on their thrones of their respective kingdoms. It's very simple concepts. Pretty much all of your RPG concepts at this point, I think, basically boil down to something similar. You do control both the cat and the dog. Although if you are playing solo, an AI will take over one of them and you can flip back and forth between them dynamically. You just press Y, switches who you're in control of, and you carry on your merry way. If you get knocked out, if an enemy does find some way to fuck up your couch... Sorry, I was checking to make sure the heat was still on. Well, it got cold for a second. If you get knocked out, it immediately switches you over to the other character, and then you can just, like, hover around the one that's downed, and then they will get brought back up. Then you can either keep going with whoever you have, or you can switch to the other one again. I find that for some unusual reason, I am grafted to the cat. And I will play as the cat, and I build up the cat, and then I'm just like putting elemental abilities and weapons and gear on the dog just enough to keep it alive. See, and I want to go through and upgrade myself.
I did things differently. I like to focus on the cat as well, but so the dog isn't useless, I turn the dog into my healer.
That's what I was doing too. Although sometimes the AI is not good at realizing you need to heal.
Yeah, which is why you swap and do it manually, but that way you have one healer and one attacker, and then if you're focusing on attacking, the dog can just be bait.
Yeah. Yeah, I did use the dog as bait a lot. But I do have a tendency, because you do, with that RPG element, you do upgrade your equipment. And so then, like, I had to catch myself because I'd find that I was putting all my money into upgrading the cat stuff because that's who I was playing mostly as. And the cat was beast, and then the dog would walk into the room and get destroyed. And then I was like, I've made a mistake.
Proud of you.
One of the things that I appreciate is that all of the dungeons and all of the quests and everything, the enemies, you can see their level if it's above you. So you know not to fuck with that. Yeah. You don't go just traipsing into a fight only to get demolished and you're like, what went wrong? No, you know what went wrong. You're a level 5 and you went into the forest where everything's level 90 and that was a mistake.
Just a little.
I may or may not have done that on at least one of my two playthroughs. What's that 90 over there? Blah. Never mind. I got it. I'm good.
So proud of you.
There are ample save spots though. And use them. Use them all the time. Because they will heal you, and they save, and you're fine. As long as you get to a safe spot. Nothing in the game is overwhelmingly difficult. Like, beyond just making sure that you grind out the level and you're appropriately geared, you're just going to go in and hack and slash and occasionally use your... Is it mana or mana?
I always say mana.
I say mana, but for some reason now I'm like, why does that feel like it's not right? Because potato, I haven't had my potato. But you use your mana for your elemental abilities, which, you know, like you said, could be used for heals or, you know, flame, ice. There's plenty of variety here. There's hundreds of items. Hundreds. You're not going to run out of shit to find or ways to find it. For a second, I thought you were about to say something, but I must have just heard it.
No, you're in your own little world.
I was like, oh boy, I interrupted, and I didn't. I don't know what happened there.
We're professionals.
Oh, it's a rough day already, and it's not even 3 o'clock yet. But yeah, the co-op is local only. There is no online multiplayer. I'm a little sad about that.
Yeah, it would have been great to team up on this one, but yeah. Thankfully Ashley and I played together. She was actually enjoying this. Hilariously enough, she broke the game.
Yes.
She pulled a U.
I tried to replicate that. Couldn't do it.
We couldn't figure out either. Here's what she did. She went into the magic upgrade hut, and she went to upgrade, and then she left and talked to the person who was going to give the lightning elemental, the lightning rod, and the magic upgrade window popped up, and it couldn't go away. And like, she was walking around, she was fighting enemies with the upgrade window up. It wouldn't let her talk to anyone. It wouldn't let her save the game. So she eventually had to just quit out. Like, she quit to the menu and it was still there.
Wow.
So we had to like quit the game completely and it was fine. We didn't run into it again, but she magically just broke that game. And I don't know how. And it was beautiful. I loved it.
I'm super impressed.
I don't think this is something that's easily repeatable. It was probably just a freak happenstance, but it was hilarious. She's like, what did I do? I don't understand. How do I make it go away? What am I doing?
Damn.
Yeah,
pretty much. I'm impressed.
Yeah, that's, me too.
I haven't broken a game that hard in a while.
I know.
And I was actively trying because I wanted to see if it could be replicated, if it was just something like would pop up and I couldn't imitate it. And I was like, damn.
Yeah, I tried myself for like a good hour. I tried, like, I would save, redo it. But
that is a better thing. Like, if it was just a freak happenstance, it's better for the optimization of the game and say, yeah. Oh, well, the game doesn't regularly break. It just has its moment. Because so, I didn't have any other problems playing it.
Nice. So for a game that has its moments, $15.
I give this an absolute buy it. I loved it on Steam. It's ported really well to Xbox. The controller bindings, I was surprised just how well I got along with them. Normally, I'm like, I need to be able to change this. It was fine. I had a great time.
Speaking of, the one thing I really wish you could do is swap the A and B buttons. Every time I wanted to dodge an attack, I kept hitting A. And I would get hit, and I wouldn't roll. So I wish you could swap dodge to the A button instead of the B button.
Did this release on Switch as well?
Yes.
I think that might be why. Because A and B on Switch are reversed. So
no, I'm pretty sure it's still the same button placement. Because X and Y are swapped as well. And that would mean that your attack's on the top button. And it wasn't.
Huh.
So I think it's just how they had their control set up. If it was customizable, that would fix everything, but I don't know how easy that would be to implement.
Look, the queen of accessibility is always going to bitch at you that you should have customizable buttons. But I also realize it's not an option for everything.
No.
But if they did want to improve the game, that'd be a good way to go about it.
Cool. All right, well, next game to talk about is called Atlas, developed by Grapeshot Games and Instinct Games, published by Grapeshot Games, released October 9th on Xbox Game Preview for $29.99. Set sail for the ultimate pirate experience. Embark on a grand adventure alongside thousands of other players in one of the largest game worlds ever built, and even claim a piece of it to call your own. Build your ship, assemble your crew, sail the high seas, and become a pirate legend. Cole, are you a pirate legend?
Fucking no. Let me tell you something about Atlas. I could put 200 more hours into this game and still not feel like I'm giving it a complete review. There's just so much. There's seriously so goddamn much. And probably the biggest reason for that is because a large part of the game is like a giant arc mod. Grapeshot is Studio Wildcard's sister studio. They have the same co-founders. I don't think they're even a little bit shy about what they pulled out of Arc to put into Atlas. The UI is Arc. It is Arc's UI. A lot of the game is just Arc with a pirate skin. The only minor difference as far as the UI goes, the only difference noticeable is that the skill tree is laid out differently. And the way that you unlock the skill tree and progress through it, whereas in Arc it was like just a list and you chose what you wanted from the list. for Atlas, they've actually gone like the flowchart skill tree look, whereas you unlock one thing and it opens up a couple of other available things in that same branch, and then you progress that way.
No time, yeah, but can you mod your ship into a dick?
I wish.
I mean, I love our listeners. Is
possible. And here's the thing. That's where my, like, I don't know that I'll ever put enough time into Atlas comes from. Because as far as I got was just, like, I wasn't naked and I have a boat. Not a pirate ship. Barely better than a raft. I have a boat. Because fucking everything wants to kill you. And despite the fact that you're surrounded by water, it is not like Ark where you could just run out into the ocean and press Y and gulp up water. That shit's got salt in it. It's salt water. You can't drink that. You have to look for fresh water either by finding lagoons or by looking for wet spots on the ground and digging for water with your hands or a shovel.
Mm.
I don't want to talk about how many times I've dehydrated in this game. This is literally Dehydration Simulator. 1,000 ways to die by dehydration. I could not, for the life of me, for the longest time, manage the dehydration. I still can't successfully find water by finding the wet spots in the dirt. Like, every time I think I've found it, it's not that. It's just, like, shading. And every time I need it, it's probably because my canteens and stuff are empty. And then I've dehydrated sitting on top of a hill. You have to worry about the weather. The weather in Ark was a thing. Like, you got affected by it being cold. You could die from that if you weren't careful. But Atlas does not fuck around. That sun is brutal. And you will dehydrate faster. And that is not a good thing. Because you are already dehydrating constantly. And you can't drink 90% of the water. The animals are also far more aggressive than anything Ark could have dreamed of. I don't care that Ark was about dinosaurs. At least the, what's the first one that you run into? Starts with a P. Anyway, not every one of them was trying to kill you. Most of them, can you drink your own piss or no? It's got to be water. Fucking Aki, though. Would be Aki to ask that. But most of the animals, not everything was trying to kill you. Like, you could go wandering off, and yeah, there would be triceratops, and they'd fuck your couch if you got too close and mess with them too much. But literally everything wants to murder you horribly. Wolves, they got you. Lions, they're there. 10 dozen snakes chasing after you while you were trying to dig for water. Ouch.
Jeez.
You're gonna die. That's all you get to do.
And then you'll be dehydrated.
And then when you respawn, you won't have a water thingy. Can't even remember the proper term right now.
Canteen?
A canteen. You know, because you don't even get to start with a canteen. You get to start with a leather pouch that you make out of animal hide. So you have to good luck go finding a chicken to kill because everything else is going to get you. On the bright side, there are cats.
Can you pet the kitties?
You can if you tame them.
Sweet.
Yeah. I was surprised at how easy it was to find horses. I know that's a stupid thing to be surprised about. But the horses on Ark were super rare to run into and, like, surrounded by all the most dangerous shit. So I rarely ever had a horse on Ark. And, like, getting a horse really quickly in Atlas kind of felt weird and, like, cheating. But it didn't matter because I dehydrated and died anyway. It didn't help me in that regard at all. You can play single player, just like Ark. You can have a privately hosted game server, just like Ark.
Do you have to pay $100 a year like Fallout?
I mean, you can pay for private servers in that regard if you want to have like a fully always on server. You can do that, but you can also just do like a privately hosted game where so long as the host is online, people can jump in and play the game on that host. But there are limits to that. And this was the same limit as with Ark, where you couldn't go more than 300 meters from the host. So like, if you think that you're going to, you know, have a hosted game without paying for a server where like hundreds of people are going to join on you and build up in your world, that shit ain't going to happen. Everything's going to be within 300 meters of wherever you're standing. And if you move and they're out of that 300 meters, they're getting rubber banded to your ass. That's just the way that cookie crumbles. That's Ark did it. Atlas does it. If you want to have the full-fledged experience, you either need to play on a public server or you need to pay for a private server and play on that. The downside is that on the public servers, all of the server alphas have already taken over and you're not likely to find a server that you can just jump in on without like knowing or being able to worm your way into one of those server alpha clans. Atlas makes this a little worse by implementing a land claim system, which makes sense in a pirate game. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But it means that if you're not able to claim land yet because you can't craft a flag or whatever, then you're on a public server. You spend all day dehydrating and respawning and dehydrating and getting eaten by snakes and respawning to finally get a house built. And then somebody from another clan comes up and plants a flag and all your shit is down there. And you are SOL. And then you just get to go somewhere else to dehydrate and get eaten by snakes. Or lions, if you're lucky. It's kind of a broken system. Like, there needs to be a little more of a fight system involved to claiming the land than just, hey, put down a flag, it's yours now, bye. At least make them, like, kill me out of my house. They didn't even have to do that. They just walked up and doink, and I was like, well, I'm going back to my private game. Which is fine. Ark had a lot of the same problems. There's always going to be on the official servers where there's the alphas who build up super fast, have giant clans, and everybody else gets fucked.
Yeah.
You know, it's a thing that happens. One of the things is that if you are playing Atlas with the default settings, unless you like mod your game by adjusting the sliders, not technically modding, but I guess in a way it is. Unless you set it to where like you gain more XP or whatever from doing tasks, it is a disgusting grind. It's a grind even with those settings set up. But I typically played Ark at default, and I went into Atlas the same way, and I was like, well, this was a mistake. I can't tell you how many times I accidentally killed myself because I was punching something to try to get enough XP to be able to unlock the ability to make a pickaxe. And then I just died because I punched and hurt myself.
Jeez.
Because I was just trying to farm enough XP to get an upgrade.
So proud of you.
And I'm just like, I wish the XP was a little higher, and I wish the grind was not so long. I will say I was very relieved that they started you off with higher movement speed, more stamina, and more carrying capacity. Because one of the things with Ark was that all of your experience points earned always went into those three things. No. Because if you can't move and you're tired and you're encumbered, the game is garbage. You need to be able to move for anything to be worth its while. Yeah. And that was, at least they took that to heart and already started you with those three elements a little higher so that you could put your XP into other attributes instead.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm mad about that.
I know this one is still in game preview, so I'm sure we're going to be talking about it again later on down the line, but for $30, is this worth investing in right now?
Yeah, I would give it a pretty recommended try. I will say, from a visual aspect, it definitely looks like a game preview game. And, I mean, it's still pretty. Don't get me wrong. Like, you stand back and see a waterfall coming down the mountainside, and you're like, ooh! But at the same time, it's still got quite a lot of flaws. It kind of looks like Ark did before it got the 4K update.
Yeah.
And so it's definitely got some issues there. It does start you off with two potential maps, though, which was impressive. Ark only had one to start with, and then had later ones as DLC. So starting off with two different ways to explore, that's a plus.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Lorn Sword Winter Chronicle, developed and published by Tower 5. It released October 23rd on Xbox and PS4 for $24.99. Lorn Sword Winter Chronicle is a story-driven action strategy game. Be the general on the battlefield and take direct action to command your soldiers and set up your economy. The Lorn Empire counts on you. Keep your mind pure and your Lorn Sword sharp. Serlina, check this one out, wrote in a review, and this is what she's got to say. Hello again, SML friends, fans, and anyone else who hears this review. Again, with this whole thinking, we have friends and fans and that people listen. One of these
days, starting to learn. Yeah.
She'll learn. It's certainly not, and this week I have the honor of reviewing Lorn Sword Winter Chronicle on the Xbox One. Lorn Sword is developed by Tower 5, and it's hailed as a story-driven action strategy game, which is right up my alley because I love lore. You control a warrior by the name of Corrin Lan Ka, a Lorn knight who is fighting in a duty-bound war. You get to learn about Corrin through cinematic scenes, which I found to be cool. I like the art style of the scenes, but I found the character portraits to be blocky and oversaturated. Most of the voiceovers are decent, but I didn't care for Corrin's children's voices. They didn't sound very natural and used language that children probably wouldn't use. Let's talk about the story for a bit. I have to say I wasn't very impressed with it. I found it to be incredibly predictable, which makes it boring for me. Not to give too much away, but Corrin is fighting in this war that has split the kingdom, and he starts being a useful pawn and so on and so forth. Pretty standard stuff with no standouts or OMG moments. As someone who is very much interested in world building, I found out very little about the world that Corrin was living in, which is a shame because the blocks are there. The gameplay for Lorn Sword is fairly pedestrian. You go here, you gather or create resources, you go kill the baddies. Where Lorn Sword stands out is you're able to summon elementals, which are elemental shock troops that you can use to aid you in battle. I like the elementals because they don't last forever. You can only summon a certain amount of them, and summoning them requires stamina. For me, summoning the elementals was a quick blitz into a base, and once they disappeared, it was time for me to bounce. You also have your regular troops as well that can follow you around. You can release them to attack, but you can't control who or what they attack, which is annoying if you're trying to take down a particular target and everyone's like, I do what I want. Well, she said, I do what I want to do, but I threw in. I gave it some emphasis. Some stank. I'm an idiot. One thing that surprised me is once you beat the first campaign, you unlock local and online split-screen co-op. What a delight. A second player can come in whenever, help you do some stuff, and then bounce without the enemy scaling. I appreciate the split-screen, but I wonder about the difficulty not being adjusted for a second human player. With everything that I've experienced in the game, I can't get over the feeling that this is a decent game for people who are new to action strategy games. That person is not me, and therefore I was a bit bored. Lorn Sword Winter Chronicle is available on PS4, Xbox One, and Steam for $24.99. I would give the game a try if you're new to this type of game. I think hardcore strategy veterans would be turned off by the baby's first strategy game vibe and middling storyline. I had a decent time with the game, but it's not compelling enough for me to play through it a second time. Sounds good. It looked interesting. Mm-hmm. For people who are new to strategy games, this might be a good one to check out.
Yeah.
All right. Next game to talk about is PBA Pro Bowling, developed and published by Farsight Studios. It released October 22nd on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and Steam for $19.99. Lace up your bowling shoes and experience the most realistic bowling simulation ever created with PBA Pro Bowling. Cole, tell us about it.
Wait a second. I got robbed here. This was supposed to be a team effort.
It is a team effort. You're just starting.
Why do I got to start?
Okay, because that's how this goes. I talk and then you talk, and it's a banter back and forth kind of deal.
Oh.
You've been doing this show for like a couple of weeks now. You should know.
I learned nothing, which is very evident in my continuous failure at PBA bowling. I am the worst bowler in the existence of ever. I can't bowl for shit in real life. I can't tell you shit about how bowling is scored.
Really?
I can't play it. It is just not my thing. I know that I routinely joke that I don't do the sports balls, but I at least know how to keep score in basketball.
What confuses you about bowling scoring?
Everything.
Like what?
Like, I know what a strike is, and I know how I got a spare, but I don't know how that converts to a score.
Okay. When you get a spare, which is you have to take two shots to knock all the pins down,
yeah, you earn 10
points.
But,
okay. And then you also add to it your very next shot. So if you bowled a spare and then you rolled an 8, you would get 18 for your first shot. And then if you missed on your second shot, you would have 18 on your first, 8 on the second. So that's what, 26? A strike works the same way, but instead of the next shot, it counts the next two shots. So that's why if you get a strike and then another strike and then another strike, that first one is worth 30 points. I promise you it makes sense. I promise you.
I have such a glazed over look.
Cole, ignore him. Bowling doesn't make any fucking sense.
Does not make, but, like, I did my whole content, but why?
Well, I was on the high school bowling team, so I guess I know a little bit more about bowling.
You've got it on lock. We took a field trip to the bowling alley for math, and guess what? I failed the day. I failed it.
So anyway, tell us about the content. I failed a
field trip, Joe.
I know you failed a field trip. I'm not surprised at anything you say anymore. But tell us about some of the content in PBA Pro Bowling, since you could at least focus on that.
Well, here's the thing. Despite the fact that I absolutely suck at bowling, they really tried to make PBA Pro Bowling viable for people like me. There is an arcade mode, and yeah, I still got my ass handed to me because I didn't understand what was going on, but at least I got to play with some extra cool balls while I was doing it. Because in arcade mode, it basically is like, you're a dumbass. Here's a special ball that splits into two balls when you push a button. Good, because I had a whole lot of 7-10 splits.
Oh, Jesus.
And I needed to clear those fuckers out. And you can do that with the special magic ball. There was also a ball that would immediately blow up as a bomb whenever it hit something. That's a good thing to have, too. There's also a special ball that gets a static electric charge around it. And anything that touches that charge is also going to get knocked over. Instead of just a tinier ball, you basically get a bigger area of knocking shit down. Oh, thank goodness for those. Oh, thank goodness.
See, I'm glad we're getting to hear about this game through the perspective of a novice bowler. As someone who's played a lot of bowling games, like, it has everything I want. It has a career mode. It has a pro shop where you could unlock different pro bowlers. I'm sure you recognized most of them, I could guarantee.
Oh, every one of them. I knew their names by heart.
I know. I have their trading cards and everything.
Yep.
It has tournaments to go through. It's got bowling, and the bowling feels good. And that's the important thing in a bowling game, that the gameplay feels good and satisfying. It feels like the physics are right. There were times where I would hit it in the pocket and the seven pin would stay up and I'd be like, you motherfucker, I knew that would happen. The pin physics is really good. The ball physics is really good. The oil patterns, everything about the game is authentic and it works really well. And I'm glad to hear that I can get your perspective as a novice bowler.
Because even though I don't understand what any of that shit meant, it was still viable for me to like pick it up and play it and progress through the league.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, you're a dumbass, but we're letting you slide. I could even get a strike sometimes, thanks to the static orb ball. And I wouldn't do that shit on my own. But the plus side is that as accessible as it was for somebody like me, it's also ideal for someone like you who is experienced and can understand all of the rigmarole that I do not. And there's a simulated mode for people like you that, you know, lacks all of the arcade glitz and glam and is a more true to life bowling experience. And it's then
no
that's where
bullshit bowling. It's yeah. What you want, just straight up bowling.
And that's where, you know, knowing how to put, I started to use a pool term. I do know how to play pool. I started to say put English on it. What's the spin that you put on the ball?
Spin.
It's just spin. See, in pool, it's English. And so I always refer to it as putting English on it.
There might be other terms for it. I just, you know, we always call it put spin on the ball.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, taking the spin of the ball into consideration and learning that the oil patterns and all that stuff, you can do all that if you really care to. But if you don't, you can still go into it and have some fun.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not completely shut out.
Yeah.
You can play the leagues. You can play free play and just sit there and hope for the best all night.
Yeah.
And you're going to be able to go into it. I was surprised. So the way that you throw the ball is very similar to like casting in a fishing game, in that you pull back on the thumbstick and then you push it forward.
Similar to golf games too.
I've never played golf. Golf's another sports ball.
See, that's why I chimed in with that, because I have played golf games.
I can balance it out with fishing. Oh boy. you gave me your cough.
Good.
Bastard.
Good.
But I was surprised in that even though it did that, like, there's not a power element to how hard or how soft you throw the ball. It's just back and go.
No.
And I kind of thought that, like, I could granny throw it if I wanted to and have a little bit more hope. You can't. It just goes. So then what's the trick to speeding the ball up? Because it shows you your ball's speed as it hits the pins. How do you make it go fast?
I don't know if there's a way to control the speed, because I just went back and forward and I would get my strikes and I would get my spares and I didn't really, I personally didn't mess too much with throwing a hook on the ball.
Is that what it's called? There you go,
spin. I didn't do too much with putting a hook on the ball or, you know, messing with spin or adjusting my position or anything too drastic. I was just playing standard basic bowling the way I do a normal life, where, you know, stand on the edge, aim for the second arrow, let it curve into the pocket, and you're good.
What's the pocket?
It's between the one and the three pin. When you bowl, you never want to hit the one pin head on, because that's how you're going to get 7-10 splits.
You want to hit that.
You want to hit it slightly to one of the sides, so it goes in that little pocket in between the head pin and one of the second pins, and that'll spread the pins out to hit more of them.
Hmm.
Instead of going down the middle.
No time said, do they have a bumper bowling mode? I wish that it would put the bumpers up. Like, I'd even let them call it demi mode if they'd just give it to me. Because I lost a few balls.
Well, maybe they'll add bumper bowling to the lineup. But as it stands at $20, as someone who's played a lot of bowling games, for $20, I think this is an easy buy it.
Yeah, I think it's a good price point for it. It is. It suits it. I mean, you'd think most sports games typically come in at the $40 to $60 range. But, yeah, and I think it's plenty easy enough that if you are not a pro bowler, even though pro bowling is in the name, you could still play it.
Yeah. So, good for all audiences and a good price, too.
Yeah.
All right. Next game to talk about is Street Outlaws, The List, developed by Team 6 Games, published by Game Mill Entertainment and Discovery Game Studios. It released October 22nd on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $39.99. Strap in and put the pedal to the floor because there's only enough room for 10. Build, customize, race, and earn your way on to the list. Competition is ruthless, and everyone is fighting for the respect that comes with the top spot. Your goal? Earn a spot on the list. Cole, tell us about Street Outlaws.
When you offered this game, I thought you were joking.
Why?
I just never would have dreamed there'd be a game based on this garbage ass reality show.
So not a fan of the show. Gotcha.
I am not. You can tell it's very scripted for a reality show. Like, they're not even, they could have at least tried to find some halfway decent actors. These guys are not. however, despite my annoyances with this program, I am very familiar with it inside and out because it is one of my husband's favorite shows. And given the fact that I frequently lay on the couch with a heating pad and watch Catfish, I'm probably not in any position to make fun of him for that.
Yeah, so I agree. At least you know.
I have my vices. He does too. This is one of his. The whole premise of the show is that there is a group of drag racers in Oklahoma City, and they have a list. The list is who are the top 10 drag racers in the area. They go out under the cover of the stars at night and illegally race up and down the street. Street Outlaws. There you have it. Street Outlaws, their list. That's where we're at. D gobbles this shit up, and I just sit here and I'm like, ooh, at least turn it down.
Okay, so how's the game?
The game is ideally the same concept. You're a new racer on the scene. You don't have any customization. You don't ever see yourself. You're there. It's the car that matters anyway. You're just body to fill it, I guess. but you would think, given how much my husband loves the show, that playing the game where he gets to be one of those drag racers and he gets to race against the people on the list, that he would eat this shit up. Spoiler alert, he did not.
No.
And I was very surprised. I think I actually tolerated the game more than he did. I think he expected far more out of it than it's capable of giving. So you do start out as a new racer on the scene. You're trying to work your way into being on the list. You want to be at the top of it. That means you've got to knock out all of your favorite racers from the show, from Murder Nova to Asian and Farm Truck to Big Chief and Daddy Dave. They're all there. They're not 3D model characters, thank goodness, because I can only imagine how poorly that would have went in this game. But the characters, okay, David would fuss at me. They're not characters, they're real people that race. They're characters. all the characters that you know and love from the show, or hate in my case, are there. They do the voice acting. I give them credit for that. It's
got that authenticity.
Authenticity with a very heavily implied air quotes.
You're setting a tone for this review, I feel.
Okay, so the game breaks the racing down into seasons and episodes. I feel like they just took one of their seasons from the show and the scripts that my husband argues me they don't have and put it into a game. So, each night you can carry out some kind of challenge or race. You can go to a junkyard and look for parts for your vehicle. You get a very crummy starter car, and it's up to you to make it a presentable thing worth racing with. You eventually you can go to the shop. You don't unlock a store until level 15. Otherwise, all your shit comes from the junkyard. That's a thing. That was a little too close to real life, is what that was.
Authenticity.
So you'll want to put any money that you earn from doing the extra challenges into building up your car so that you have a better chance at making it onto the list and hopefully to the top of it. Challenges range from basic time trials. This is where, like, D's first complaint comes in on the game. He was hoping for a dyed-in-the-wool drag racer. He wanted to drag race.
I mean, drag racing is there.
It is. But you also do those weird challenges where it puts you on, like, not a street. Like, if Need for Speed can let me just go race down the street, I don't know what the problem with Street Outlaws was that they put you on a closed track.
I can understand that they want to change up the gameplay and give you things to do other than just driving in a straight line. But I got to agree with you, when they take you off the highway and put you in confined spaces or tracks that you got to, like, run down barricades or shit like that. Yep. Anything that involves turning, I think the game loses it, because I think the handling in this game is awful.
There is only so much you can do with tuning your car and putting the right parts in as well. Yeah. Like, ideally, yeah, you're going to start off with a garbage car that can't make turns. But I'm here to say I stuck it out till the point that I didn't have a garbage car anymore. And I was tuning that shit and doing it properly.
And you still couldn't make turns. And
it was still garbage. And the other aspect of that is you are supposed to be focused on the drag race. And this is another thing that D had contention with. He was tuning his car for that drag race.
Yeah.
The way that you race on a drag strip is very different from how you race on a closed track. The requirements of your car for winning a drag race are very different from when you need to make left turns.
Yeah.
And so he would fine-tune his car for the drag race, but then he would fumble miserably when he would go into the challenges, and he would end up, like, coming out with bronze and silver medals because he just wasn't tuned for that. It's not what he was supposed to be doing in the game. Mm-hmm. So it kind of feels like it punishes you for setting yourself up to properly get on the list. And it kind of fragments, like, am I going to put my effort into this or into properly racing the drag sections, or am I going to put my effort into making left turns? I see you shaking your head over what Aki said.
Yep. I don't like this review. Every time I hear drag race, I think of the other type of drag race, and I'm left highly disappointed.
You know, I am going to say that it tickles me in my little bleeding heart, liberal feminist heart, that drag race has been co-opted for that, given how much dumb rednecks love their drag races. Good luck Googling that, bitch.
Oh, Jesus.
It tickles me. I'm amused by it. I'm not even going to lie. But yeah, the challenges, especially the ones where you have to hit the barricades, are just infuriating and kind of out of place. I do like the way that they set up the drag race.
Yeah, how they have it segmented into first you got to burn out to loosen up your tires and get them warm so that they can grip the road better. Then you got to bump your car up to the line and not cross it. Mm-hmm. Then you gotta get ready for the race and don't start earlier or else you get disqualified. I had that happen. Yep. Got my achievement.
Don't leave your lane.
Yep. Don't leave your lane. Stay in your lane. Go straight. And I like the fact that the car does kind of steer off to the side a little bit because it's like desert bus. You need to pay attention. You can't just hope it goes straight forever because it's going to turn and you're going to leave your lane or hit the wall or something.
And you can tune it to minimize that if you know what you're doing. Yeah. It's just gonna suck when you gotta go knock down barricades.
Yeah, I enjoyed the actual street racing when it came down to it. It's just all the other challenges and stuff. I appreciate the fact that they wanted to put other stuff in the game, so it wasn't just street racing. But I think overall, for $40 as a package, I gotta give this one a deny it. It's
are you going full deny? I would like I said, I tolerated it and played far more than D, and I asked for it for D.
Yeah.
Like I thought he was gonna, so I think he would agree with your deny it, but I'm gonna say that it kinda hovers more around a very low try it.
If it wasn't $40
the price does make it hard.
Like if this was a $20 game, I'd give it a try. Yeah. But at $40,
catch it on sale.
I gotta go deny it at $40.
Because I do think the drag racing elements are good.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, building up the car and tuning it and having to repair your parts because you fuck them up. And I liked how they did all that. I even kind of tolerated the season and episode concept. I like how you had 5 days before you did the big race. But those extra challenges.
Those extra really challenges.
Pull it out of there.
Yeah. Oh, well, next game to talk about is Lonely Mountains Downhill, developed by Megagon Industries, published by Thunderful Publishing. It released October 23rd on Xbox, PS4, and PC for $19.99. Just you and your bike, take it on a thrilling ride down an unspoiled mountain landscape, make your way through thick forests, narrow trails, wild rivers, race, jump, slide, and try not to crash all the way from the peak to the valley. Cole, tell us about Lonely Mountains.
Speaking of left turns... Boy, are you going to be making all the turns going down those hills. So Lonely Mountains is not quite Descenders, but a similar concept, but scaled back. It's very simplistic when you start off with. I want to give them credit, though, that you start off with the female bike rider and you have to change to the dude. Fuck you guys. Girls rule. We get to be the starters for a change. God damn it, there went my phone again. I know that is such a minor thing, and I acknowledge that, but it did tickle me in the moment when I went into the character customization and realized that you start with the girl, because I'm so used to having to switch from male to female, that starting with the female as the first character, primary character, I was like, oh! It tickled me.
Okay, but how about the actual game?
I'll get there. That's what I'm working on. Give me time. Let me relish in my joy for a second.
We're over 2 hours already.
We got 4 more hours to go. That's how this show works. We're just getting started. But in all
buckle
honesty,
up, buckaroo.
the game has a low poly aesthetic, so it doesn't matter if you're male or female. The only difference is you get some triangles for boobs. Everything is very, very scaled down, very simplistic. When you first start, you only have exploration mode, and you'll simply start at the top of a mountain and bike your way down it. The only goal is to get to the end. Joe really fucking sucked at this.
I did. I
did fine.
We were talking about this before we started recording. There's achievements in the game. One of the first achievements that most people will unlock is to cross your very first finish line. That was my third achievement. Because my first two were for spectacular crashes.
Wow.
But I will say, despite how bad I am at this game, I am having such a blast with it.
I really enjoy the exploration moments in it, where you just like get to try the different routes. There are only two mountains. That is a bit of a downside.
Yeah.
But each mountain has four trails. The trails kind of shift up your path down, and even though the scenery looks the same, you're going completely different routes, with very little crossover. However, things take a turn for the more complicated when you start throwing in the challenges.
The
plus side is it lets you choose how you're going to challenge yourself. If you want to do a time challenge and you want to tackle all the time challenges at once and you think you can get down that mountain in 2 minutes and 30 seconds, then choose it. Choose the 2 minute and 30 second challenge and choose the 2 minute and 40 second challenge and beat them both all at one time. You can do that. And I have great respect for any game that lets you stack challenges like that.
Oh, yeah.
That is rare. However, getting done with the challenges is also rare. Doesn't matter which one you choose. They're all hard.
They are. They crash less than 20 times. That didn't happen for me.
I didn't have trouble with those because I tend to only crash 2 to 3 times anyway. I was really, really trying to go for like a perfect run. That shit ain't happening. Because I always managed to hit at least one rock. You hit every rock, apparently.
And tree. And I landed in the water a couple of times.
But did you hit the rock and the tree at the same time? Because I got the
achievement
for that one.
No, I didn't. I got to try that one next.
That's a special skill right there. You got to hit it all. But in addition to the timed descents, you also have the ones, like you mentioned, for only crashing so many times. There's ones for finding different rest stops. How did you find any other rest locations?
I thought I did, but nothing ever popped, so I guess not.
I thought, like, hell, every time I would come across an area and I'd stop and be like, this is a good rest point. The game did not agree with me.
Yeah.
And I went off the beaten path in some really squirrely locations. And I still could not find any of the designated rest locations. There are additional bikes that you can unlock. The bikes do matter. They have different grips. They have different stabilities. They have... some of them can take more of a beating and you can fall a little more and not turn to voxel gore, you know, which is important. You can turn the blood off, by the way, but where's the fun in that?
Yeah.
Even when the kids were playing, I was like, hee hee, blood splatter. I'm a horrible parent. but the bikes are hidden behind finding the missing parts. And the missing parts are tied to the way more difficult challenges. You are not going to find any parts just for cascading casually down the mountainside. Which I might add, even though I say like cascading casually, you are drifting and sliding and falling off of shit. You had good luck.
Yeah.
You're not... I mean, I make fun of Joe for being bad because he hit everything, but you are inevitably. You have to take a pee at the rest stop to get into the team. I think you're lying, no time. But also, you might not be lying because
we didn't find one, so. Carnage found one. Good for him.
Did he pee at it? Is that how he found it? Can you confirm or deny this rumor? That's important. I texted my sister, please don't message me. I'm going to be recording. I cannot answer you.
Oh, God. I love it.
I am not approaching the anxiety pile. Okay. No time is lying. There's always the possibility you have to pee in a game.
True.
Although I would be entirely tickled if, like, my little bike rider whipped out a shiwi and peed in switches. Carnage isn't even good at pretending like that's true. He didn't even make it believable. If you wanted to be believable, you could have been like, yeah, she has a shiwi. That would have been great.
Yeah, there's an outhouse. You just pull up and a guy hops off and runs in.
See?
We're talking about shit that's not in the game. What is in the game?
Crashing against rocks, voxel gore. There should be. I wish there was a little more voxel gore. Look,
I know. I saw the blood option. I was hoping for so much more blood.
Right. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's kind of adorable when you die in the little squares. Just. But it would be funnier if, like, you were going down the hill and you could see blood on the rocks from where you died the time before.
Yeah, that'd be neat.
God damn it, Janie.
Oh, Lord. Well, let's jump to the conclusion here. For 1999, what do you think of Lonely Mountains Downhill?
Is it really 1999? That's kind of high, given that there's only two mountains. So then if there's two mountains and then there's four variations.
So it's $2.50 per trail.
Mm.
I think I got $2.50 worth out of that first trail for how much I suffered and how badly I did. And the best part, I didn't even mention this during the write-up, Xbox players, this is on Game Pass.
That is the best part. That is single-handedly the best part. On Game Pass, I don't know why you wouldn't at least try it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had a lot more fun with it than I expected to. Like, I also kind of expected to go into it, like, doing tricks and stuff and taking more of either, like, a Descenders or a Bike Mayhem 2 approach to it. And I was kind of relieved that it was just more casual at 10 cents a fall. Given how many times he fall, it might not even be that high of a price.
And we're already over 20 bucks if it's 10 cents a fall. Carnage, I love how she doesn't mention Trials.
Because Trials is garbage.
Them's fighting words with Carnage.
I also haven't played any of them besides Trials of the Blood Dragon, so.
My Ban Eternal. You deserve that one.
No, I'm the co-host.
You deserve that one for all the times you want to ban him.
That's a co-host perk.
So yeah, your official verdict?
Yeah, I'd say buy it. I think it's worth it. It does. I would like to see more tracks. Especially if they can be added as like some free DLC or something tacked on later on.
Yeah.
Or even pay. Hell, charge us $2.50 for an extra mountain or two. I'm okay with that. I think it's worth it. I definitely enjoyed it for more of like a casual game, though. Then I did not give a fuck about the leaderboards and stuff. I just wanted to dick around and explore on the bike.
Yeah, it's I agree. I thought it was a lot of fun. It was more fun than I thought it was going to be. It's just a really cool game. And if you have Game Pass, there's absolutely no reason not to try it. All right, next game is Caretaker Game, developed and published by Pulse Tense Games, released October 23rd on Xbox One for $7.99. Caretaker is an immersive first-person horror experience. You are hungry for the truth, and perhaps this caretaker is hungry for something else. Cole, tell us.
Your face. He's hungry for your face.
All right, $7.99, your verdict?
Let's tell you a little more about it first. It is a first-person horror game, and it pulls on that whole trope of investigators looking into an urban legend, trying to disprove it, and then finding themselves in a bad situation. If you're an investigator, and somebody tells you to investigate an urban legend, and you show up at the scene, and it's the middle of the goddamn night, and it's pouring rain like piss out of a boot, and you got nothing more than a tiny little flashlight, and there's a whole bunch of abandoned buildings with blood scrawled on the walls, go home. Okay? Problem solved. Achievement unlocked. You weren't the dumbass. You're the dumbass here. You're going to go inside. You're going to go inside all the buildings. There is a whole lot of trekking back and forth in this game. It's a little deceptive because initially it kind of feels like it's just a horror walking sim. Because you're trekking around. You're looking for keys. Literally every goddamn thing is locked. Nothing lets you go anywhere until you start finding keys. I spent a lot of time thinking, oh, this is a walking sim and I'm fine and nothing's going to jump out at me. Nothing's going to spook me. The occasional thing might fall off the wall, might pull a layers of fear and like sling something across the room in front of me, but I'll be fine. Not scared. It's good. Have I ever mentioned that I absolutely hate to be chased? There are chase sequences.
Nice.
And these, I hate to be chased. That is enough to like make me want to scream in its own right. I'm not scared of them. I just don't like them. And Caretaker makes these chase sequences worse by not giving you any sensitivity settings. And you move at the speed of smell. If this fucker walked any slower, he'd be going backward. Okay?
Beautiful.
He hobbles. I felt like I needed to give him my cane to speed him up. He was just slinking through the buildings. Now, you can press the run button and you fucking get. But it goes so fast and you have no sensitivity settings. And so then you're going to run into walls and you're going to get caught. And the caretaker is going to eat your face. And it's terrible and it's sad. And then you get to do it all over again. And you better hope that you hit the right button. Because when you die in this game, it kicks you back to the main menu. And the button will be on new game, not continue. So if you are not careful,
your save or...
You can continue.
Oh, okay.
As long as you don't hit new game first on accident.
I hate it when games default to new game. If there's a continue option, that should be the default option no matter what.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I've run into that in games before where the default is new game, and I've fucked up and lost progress before because of that.
Yeah. There's a plus side, though. You can get the completion in this in 15 minutes.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. It's not even published by Radaleka. I don't know what's going on here, but you don't even have to finish the game to get the achievements.
No, boy.
And I did finish the game and I was like, well, that's rude. After I found out that you could, like, when I started going through the achievements and realized I had already got them all before I got to the end. And then I was just like, I could have stopped.
But you're a professional and you went on.
Didn't need to get my face eaten by the caretaker quite so many times. It was heartbreaking, but also I was like, well, the achievement whores will be glad to hear me say this. Yeah, it's incredibly quick. Just when you inevitably die, and you will, because the controls are not sensitive enough to justify the tight turns that you have to make while running. Be careful. Make sure that you don't hit new game. Hit continue instead.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, as it stands, $8. What do you say?
It's creepy. It's good horror, realistically. I give it a buy it. Yeah. Cool. Quick, easy completion. Decent horror story. Still a little tropey. Could use a little bit of polish with the movement and some sensitivity options, but besides that, go for it.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get Dark Mika in here. It is time for her to join us.
Woo! Did I do everything?
Yeah.
Am I done? Yeah, I'm done. I'm close this out.
Yeah, you're done. You are finito.
Oh, my.
Oh, I'm finished then? Okay. Well, thanks, everybody. It was a great show.
I'm funny.
Going to bed. Fuck everybody.
No, we still got two more games to talk about. But Dark Mika, how are you doing?
I am alive, which is better than the alternative, I guess, most of the time, usually. Tired. I went to bed at like 5 and I was up at 10.
Damn.
Yeah. But I did get next week's game done for review.
You're on the ball.
Yeah.
Jelly.
Well, what? it wasn't as long as that I was kind of expecting. So it was a little more doable, but man, yeah. You guys will hear about it next Thursday, I promise.
Sounds good, but are you ready to talk about your games for now?
Yeah, I am. Yes, totally.
All right. Well, the next game to talk about is Moons of Madness, developed by Rock Pocket Games, published by Funcom, released October 22nd on Steam for $24.99, coming later in 2020 for Xbox One and PS4. Moons of Madness is a first-person, story-driven cosmic horror game where the scientific exploration of Mars meets the supernatural dread of Lovecraft. Aki, tell us about it.
Okay, honestly, when I first went to go play this, I actually thought this was made by the people who made the another game that I reviewed on here earlier this year, maybe last year, called Canarium, because they both dealt with the Lovecraftian Cthulhu shit. And I was like, oh, this must be them. And I was like, oh, they've really improved their graphics. Turns out it's a different company. When I started playing, I was like, oh, this isn't the same company. That explains why the graphics are so different. In this, you play as a mechanic named Shane. You're on Mars, just, you know, doing nothing, really, because it's fucking Mars. You sit on your thumb, and that's about all you got to do up there. And suddenly, for some reason, everyone just stops sleeping well, which is told to you later, but it's also shown at the very beginning. People just aren't sleeping well. They're having weird dreams, weird nightmares. They're seeing shit, hallucinating all over the fucking place. And crazy shit starts to really, really go down at the start of the game. You start off in a nightmare, and some freaky shit immediately happens in the dream, and then immediately when you wake up, freaky shit starts happening within minutes. So it's already starting you. You're hitting the ground running at this point. Running. It's a walking sim game. Yeah, it's a good one. I did like it, but it does have some puzzles, but most of them are number puzzles. Like, this needs to link to here, like one of those pipe puzzles, but you have to hit certain numbers to add up to the number that's at the end. Or here's these three pipes, and they all combine together in different ways, and each one is whatever number you flip it to divided by a number, and you have to get them all to equal this number. It's all just pretty much math stuff. And they're all very basic. There's only a handful of them in the game. Other than that, it's pretty much just a walking sim and reading stuff that you find to get more backstory, find passwords and the like to open up doors and things like that. It's a very, very simple game, but the story is very, it's not just Lovecraftian because Lovecraftian shit's in it. It's also very Orwellian to me, because you're working for this company. No one knows where you are but this company. They're outright having you lie to everyone, including your family, about where you are. Everyone thinks you're in fucking Antarctica. You're on fucking Mars.
Slight difference.
Gosh. Yeah, just a little bit. They're about as cold as each other, though. So, mean, they're both fucking freezing. And you know, everyone there is, they have very specific jobs. One of them is dealing with plant life on Mars, even trying to raise plants on Mars. I guess not plant life on Mars necessarily, but trying to make plants grow. Then you have a security person, a mechanic, which is you, Shane, a demolition dude who's also kind of a mechanic. He's a tech comms person typically, and someone else. I don't know what the fuck the other one did, because I already forgot, because I didn't give a shit. And then you have a helper. The helper's a dick. His name's Lucas, and he's such a cunt. And you hear that just by reading all the extra stuff that you can find. You get to go through people's emails. You find notes that are written everywhere. Lucas is such a dick. But yeah, it's pretty much just a walking sim. There are a couple points where you can die, including if you jump off of high stuff, which the first time I found something really high up, I immediately jumped off it, because
that's what you do in games.
Exactly. It's just like you jump into water the first time you see it. Just to
you
see
have
you
to
die.
Test the fall damage.
Exactly. In this game, you take a fuck ton. Oh, and your ass will fucking die. don't jump off of shit is what I learned very quickly. Just don't fucking do it.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it was fun. But what all can I actually say about this? It's a very atmospheric game. Like, very quickly you realize that you're not typically in danger. There are a few points where you are and you can die. But most of the game isn't like that, and it's very you figure that out within minutes. It's pretty obvious. But it still keeps that atmosphere. It's still super tense the entire time. Even though you know you're not going to die, it still feels really tense, like you might anyways.
Any good scares in the game? Jump scares?
There's a couple jump scares if you're looking at it at the right time. Because it's scripted to happen, but not scripted to happen when you're looking at it necessarily. It's just when you're at this place or you've done this happens, and it's expected that you'll probably be looking in that direction. I found like 90% of the time I wasn't, so I didn't actually see most of them. But I'd hear it, and then I'd look up and be like, oh, that was not there earlier. Or, oh, that's not... What was there isn't there anymore. It's like, I must have missed that.
So proud.
Oh, well. Yeah, that story of my fucking life. But you can sprint, duck, all that basic crap. You can't jump or anything. So it's generally you sprint everywhere because there's not much to do after you've read all the stuff in the same area, because you go around the areas a few different times, the main area at least, you go through it a few different times. The environment changes a little bit, but it's still the same thing. You just have to deal with obstacles. In other areas, you only visit them really once, each of the other areas. And they're all pretty interesting. Like, you go to a giant radio tower in one level, and you have to figure out how to get the fucking radio powered up, because everything there is a piece of shit because you're on fucking Mars. And, you know, I can't really talk too much about the story because there's some really cool stuff that happens later on. But because it's a walking sim, it is heavy narrative. So I can't really fucking say anything about it.
Yeah. Well, is the narrative worth the $24.99 asking price?
I'm poor, just in case anyone hasn't fucking figured that shit out yet. I mean, it blows your mind. But so time for money for me is important. I would have liked this more at like $15, because it's not an incredibly long game. It's maybe 6 to 8 hours, maybe. It is really fun. It's a very beautiful game. My computer isn't even all that fantastic. It is a gorgeous fucking game. It's beautiful to look at. But it's really short. If you have the disposable income to buy it at that, fucking go for it. It's a fantastic game. I totally suggest getting it. For people like me, I'd suggest wait until it's closer to like $15, because I think that'd be the perfect price for poor-ass people like me for this game. So, yeah.
Awesome. Sounds good. Well, we got one final game to talk about, and that is a preview of Alder's Blood, developed by Shockwork Games, published by No Gravity Games, releasing sometime Q4 2019. Alder's Blood is a stealth tactical turn-based game set in a grim world where the nature stood against humanity and repelled civilization. Use a wide variety of weapons, stay in shadows, and prepare deadly traps to survive in combat. Aki, tell us about Alder's Blood.
Okay, you play at, well, I guess I should state, this is a tactical turn-based strategy game. It's a very small-scale one. It's not like Civilization or any of that shit. It's not fucking gigantic. You have a small group of, from every fight I played in the game, you could only use three hunters, but you can have as big as a fucking squad as you want, because you can just keep fucking hiring more and more of the assholes. Most of them are not particularly useful. Including your starting people. You can quickly recruit people that are much better than them in every category. It's like, because you really want that fucking health, and your people start with, I think, two of them. I think all of them start at 100, but like, I was immediately able to recruit people who had 180. I was like, what's more useful? That being said, the health, while good when you get attacked because none of your characters wear armor, it's not super necessary, I found, actually, amazingly. But I guess I should tell you a little bit about what bit of the story I was able to get to, because the game did not have a functioning save system, at least for me. I don't know if that was a glitch, but at this time, the save system didn't work for me, so every time I played it, I literally had to start from the fucking beginning again and go through all the same missions again and again and again to get a little further. And then I was like, I'm done because I've spent so long on this today. It's like, and I'll only get this far tomorrow. So, this, you play as a squad of hunters, obviously. And as I said, you can get as many as you want, but you have to feed them all. This is very survival mechanic-y in that you have to go search for food. You search for mechanical parts, for silver, which is how you buy shit. You can mechanical parts so you can craft stuff. Ritual ingredients for I don't fucking know what, because I don't know what that shit does. So you have to actually pay attention to these things. And if you get so many people every time you move, because the map has a lot of different little environments in it, and every time you move to one of them, it costs a certain amount of food. And that's dependent on how many people you have, because they eat a couple times a day. So you have X many people, you need two or three times that amount of food. So you have to keep them alive, otherwise they'll starve and, you know, die, because people who starve, they die eventually if you don't fucking feed them. It's, you know, part of life.
Yeah.
So there are some survival mechanics which I don't like. Nothing about this game is something that I naturally would like. I'm just gonna put that out there as well. I don't like survival mechanics. I don't particularly like turn-based strategy tactical games either. So this was not a game I was actually prepared to like. I liked it a bit, actually, because it has a lot of stealth element to it. When you go into fights, there's reeds and tall grasses, all that kind of crap, that you can hide your characters in. As long as you're not in the wind, and the wind changes direction fucking constantly, which drove me out of my mind. As long as the enemies aren't within the little trail that it shows, which is where your scent's going to be, they don't know you're there. You can make weapons, craft some weapons that have really shitty silencers, which is what a silencer is. Silencers do not make your guns as quiet as you think they do from video games. They are still loud fucking things. This game treats a silencer like it's real life. You still make a bunch of noise, but it's nowhere near as much. Mm. So you have a cone of sound that you make. Anything that's not in that cone of sound will not hear you. They do not know you exist as long as you're in the grass, because they can't see you. The only creature that's going to know you're there is whatever the fuck you just shot. And you can immediately move that character to another place that has grass that's off to the side somewhere, and the monster will still think you're in that grass where you shot it from.
Nice.
So it's, yeah, so everything, that's where its tactical stuff came in, which I wasn't expecting. I was expecting tactical, like, civilization-type tactical shit, where you have to really plan everything the fuck out. This, it's just like, be stealthy. That's it. So health doesn't really matter, because you honestly shouldn't be getting in a point where the monster is going to come up and eat your fucking face. That means you're a bad fucking hunter, because don't let them eat your face. It's just that simple. It's kind of like real life there. When you're in a group and you're trying to take out, you know, terrorists, you don't want the terrorists to come up and gun you in the face. Yeah. You'll want protection just in case it happens, but you're not supposed to fucking let it happen. It's bad mojo. And this game very much takes that same thing. Health is good, but you shouldn't be losing it in the first place. generally, that's pretty much it for how the mechanics of the game works. The story is, humankind killed the literal god, their god, a real god, to try and take its power because greedy humans are greedy assholes. Real life, right? And yeah. Fucking, that was lost to history forever the fuck ago. And thanks to that god's corpse rotting, it has brought corruption to the land and birthed all these fucking monsters. And hunters were the workers of God, I guess is what you call it. They aren't quite human, but they're effectively human. And after God died and all these centuries that have passed, hunters now hunt these monsters to protect people, even though people hate them. Think The Witcher, except for its cowboys. Everyone fucking hates them. Everyone treats them like dirt. But they come running and crying to them whenever they need help because people are assholes. So that's the gist of the story. And even your own characters did not realize that the god existed. Like, all this was lost to history. Someone that one of your characters knew found this information, and now you're working with that person to try and find God's corpse to destroy it, to get rid of this fucking blight of corruption that's creating all these fucking monsters. So you don't have to, you know, risk your life and die, because there's a few ways to kill the monsters, but all of them inflict a corruption upon the hunter, which will eventually make them turn and hurt their own companions. It makes them go to berserk eventually. So they can die from the monsters. Killing the monsters makes them die slowly, and people hate them. Not a good life. So get rid of the blight, get rid of all the monsters, you have a much better fucking life. That's the gist of it.
Nice. Well, I know this is just a preview, so I'm sure we'll talk about this one more down the line. Is this something that people should be keeping their eyes on?
I think so, yeah. If that kind of combat sounded cool, yeah, totally. If you're not into stealth and you're not into turn-based strategy games, this isn't going to be for you. But I think it has a very interesting art style, and the story seems pretty cool from what I've been able to see of it, because again, save system doesn't work, so I can't get too far into it.
Yay, preview, Bill.
But the story so far, from what I've seen, really interesting, and the art style is really cool. It's unique to me. And I like stealth, so I ended up liking this. So, yeah, I think it's worth keeping an eye on.
Awesome. Sounds good. All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Aki, thank you, as always, for coming on, doing your thing. Cole, thanks for being here. And
yay.
Little surprise, but there's some breaking news from BlizzCon. Diablo 4 and Overwatch 2 both confirmed.
From what I've seen,
are they from mobile?
No.
The Overwatch 2 thing doesn't really interest me, because the best part of Overwatch is Tracer's girlfriend, who isn't even in the game.
Oh, Jesus.
At least this part. Oh, she's a just this most adorable, cute little redhead. Anyways, that's the most interesting part of Overwatch to me, so I don't care about Overwatch 2. And I haven't really... I'm not a big fan of Diablo. I don't play them. But from what I've seen... It dropped the cartoony look, and it's going very brutal dark, which is very interesting.
Yeah, I haven't watched the trailers yet, obviously, because we're doing the show. Next episode, Cole, I was trying to get in touch with you about this, but I think we're going to start at 9 on Tuesday, because Chris is going to join us to chat about everything from BlizzCon.
Yeah, I should be fine with that.
Cool. There's another piece of news. I don't know. I wasn't here for the whole news bit. Did you see that Blizzard had one of the head people? I don't remember. I think it was the president, but I'm not sure. Actually came out and apologized for how they handled the Hong Kong stuff.
Yeah, I saw that they came. Again, this is stuff we're going to go into in a lot more detail on the next episode. I just wanted to drop that the breaking news that Diablo and Overwatch 2 are official and confirmed and happening.
Yeah, I've heard rumors that they're going to end up killing Sarah and getting Tracer with Widowmaker. I've heard rumors about that. I don't believe that's true, though. I fucking hope not. Anyways, it's weird.
Guess we'll see. That's a couple of days away. We'll talk about that then. But that is it for this episode. Gonna go out with some more music from the Syndravania, the Belmont Adventure Project, because I'm really enjoying that. Anyone have any final words to end the show?
The TA redesign does not look bad.
No,
I didn't know TA had a redesign, but the Steam library redesign sucks ass.
I don't know why Carnage is mad about it. It looks fine.
It looks updated. I need to go look at that after this, because I didn't know TA had a redesign. I haven't been on there in a few weeks.
See, now you'll know if Carnage listens to the whole episode or not, because he already left. So then you'll know if he doesn't listen to the whole show, because I threw that out there.
Yeah. So final words, Carnage sucks.